Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Where the line between neighbor and nightmare is razor thin. Welcome to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring former prosecutor and defense attorney Eric Faddis.
John Diddy-Combs, of course, more accusations coming out against him. Some new filings this week from Busby and others. The big one that everyone is talking about, that we've been hearing about, a 10-year-old in the allegations. This time, the numbers keep going down. Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor, joining us to discuss. It's like every week it gets a little bit dirtier, a little bit scarier, a little bit more vile in terms of the accusations against him. What's your thoughts as we get younger on this scale?
Yeah, I mean, it really adds a new dimension to some already super serious allegations. When you bring in, the potential of pedophilia aspect, it has potential implications for the criminal case. And really, in the public eye, it affects that perception as well.
Obviously, these are accusations that go way back. I believe this is 2005 is what we're talking. So the 10-year-old today would be about 24. How do you go back in one of these cases and argue your case, I guess, to say that he did this to you?
You know, that is super tough with these older allegations, because if there was no outcry that was close in time to when this allegedly happened, that there was likely no significant investigation. So you don't have witness statements. You don't have sane exams. You don't have medical information that could corroborate the claim. You have your own testimony, and perhaps he made an outcry to people around him, and you could bring in consistent statements from those people. So there are ways to do it, but it's an uphill battle.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of bringing in like psychologists, if there was one, or a therapist or things like that, or friends. How well do juries take that sort of information? If, let's say, this one goes to trial and you have a therapist that was talked to 15 years ago, and they can bring that information to light. If you have some friends, whatever, just some people that can corroborate this story, does that make it a slam dunk then? I mean, we are talking about basically witness type testimony here, and that's what it's being based on. But in a case like this, you usually don't have a lot of other stuff unless other people were present.
Yeah, by no means a slam dunk, even with those potential additional witnesses. You know, one thing juries look at is they say, hey, gosh, why didn't you mention something to the authorities back then? And I don't know whether that there was such a report to the authorities, but it sounds like there might not have been. So the juries are going to look to, hey, did you tell anyone else about this? Is it consistent with what you're saying now? Are there details that could give rise to a conclusion of credibility that, hey, it looks like this happened. There's consistency throughout these statements. Those are things that the jury wants to see, but still with a cold case, very tough.
Is the argument of why didn't you tell somebody back then as strong as it was like 10 years ago? I mean, we have such a better understanding today of how this stuff works. And you know, it's an ignorant thing to say sometimes to a survivor of like, well, why didn't you tell somebody back then? Because you know, and I know, you know, just how much pressure and trauma someone's going through. They don't necessarily want to be getting spotlight if they're even believed. And especially if we're talking 2005 and somebody said, did he rape my 10-year-old? Or that 10-year-old comes out and says that, and again, these are just allegations, I don't think anyone would have believed it.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely the concern. And it's a really important question, because I think that the societal view has sort of shifted in recent times, such that we kind of understand how, it's kind of shitty to have to disclose this extremely personal abuse that happened to you and deal with potential backlash, deal with being disbelieved, deal with a court process that can be super intrusive. Mm-hmm. And so there are reasons for a latent outcry. This is very latent, but not super surprising. And I think that we're sort of, as a culture, understanding why that happens a little better.
As we learn more and more about this, Jeff, and people come back all these years later, because they feel, you know, they're more mature, they're older, they're a different person by now. Anybody who didn't have this happen 15 years later is probably a different person by now. Just through development, are we learning through cases like this that coming forward really makes a huge difference in this, even if people don't want to? Or are we learning, look, if something happened to you and you don't want to come forward right now, which is totally understandable, I think, from most people's perspectives, tell somebody about it. At least tell somebody. At least have a record of it. Should you change your mind down the road? We're, as a human, not the greatest at thinking all that well about down the road and what we may want to do at some point in time. But it might be one of those things where it's like, yes, get it on the record somewhere. You don't have to go forward, but get it on the record.
Yeah, you know, I think that is certainly best practices, but, you know, that's easy for me to say.
Yeah.
If I was 10 years old and had been perped on, you know, I'd probably have other concerns in my mind rather than, you know, sort of documenting this for what happens in the future. So certainly that is something that ought to happen. But if it didn't happen, I think there are understandable reasons for that.
Do you think we'll ever see a shift in society or culture? I mean, if everybody started coming forward right away when this stuff happened, and again, I'm not shaming a victim. I totally get why people don't. I understand that. But if we had a shift in that, if those things started coming forward in a more efficient, quicker manner once they happen, do you think that would help pull down the world of these type of people? Because they seem to rely on that anonymity, on that way of nobody's going to talk about this. Your odds of getting reported if you're the predator, not the greatest. I mean, you are in the good odds if you're a predator of continuing to do this sort of thing. But if that shifted, if people felt the safety to do that, do you think we'd see a kind of a decrease in this sort of sexual violence as a whole?
You know, it seems like the view on public outcry regarding sexual assault is changing, and the environment is getting better for those folks. Studies that we have show us that this kind of thing is terribly underreported, even still. And so if there is an increase in reporting, does that increase public awareness about it? Does that potentially have a deterrent effect on other, you know, big time folks who might think twice now about engaging in this type of behavior because it's more likely that they could be held accountable? I think so.
It's certainly something fascinating to contemplate, and maybe we will get to a point where society is, you know, I mean, I think we're getting there. I think people are feeling safer to be able to come out and talk about these sort of things, and hopefully that continues to strengthen as time goes on. Let's talk about another element to the case of Diddy. This one just coming out, like literally in the last 24 hours. Judge is saying that, at least in one of the cases here, that Jane Doe can't remain a Jane Doe. She has to reveal her identity if she wants this case to go forward. The case goes back to accusing that Combs raped her in 2004 at a Manhattan hotel when she was a 19-year-old college student. So again, this goes way back, 2004. She's in her 30s by now. Obviously, you can't fight a ghost in court if you don't know what the hell the details are. We don't know the details of any of these Jane or John Does, or these federal ones as well, unless the name has been named like Cassie, but I think even the federal is just alluded to. Are we going to start seeing the names here of these Jane and John Does? There's hundreds of them that are coming out. Can they remain anonymous and continue with a lawsuit against somebody like this?
I think this judge's ruling requiring plaintiff identity disclosure is going to have a cascading effect on all of the other civil suits and potentially on the criminal side as well, because that's sort of the general rule, is that you have to disclose your identity. It's only the exception to remain anonymous. And the judge in this case found that exception should not be applicable based on analysis of number of factors.
What's the argument to go into this anonymously? I mean, does somebody go into this thinking they're going to stay anonymous when they're filing a suit like that? I mean, can someone completely stay anonymous from start to finish, even if you're not Diddy, and go after somebody if the person doesn't even know who they're arguing against?
You know, there are degrees of anonymity in the legal context in terms of filing a case. Sometimes you're completely anonymous to the public and the whole world. Sometimes you're not anonymous to the people involved in the court case, but remain anonymous to people outside the court case. And so there are kind of levels to this, and it's going to depend on a case-by-case basis, judge-by-judge basis. But, you know, their argument is like, hey, look, this is super sensitive, super personal. I could receive backlash. Diddy could send his goons to kind of like rummage through my life and turn it upside down. And I think that's their concern.
Well, I mean, that would certainly be the concern. And I would understand why people don't want to come out and name their names, especially all these years. People have seen the backlash. We've seen cars explode. We've seen, you know, alleged attacks on people for coming out and saying bad things about Diddy. So I get the fear. I would think today maybe it'd be a little bit less. I don't know. Who knows what kind of power he still has with people on the outside. Is there a way in a case like this to remain anonymous to the public, but, you know, keep it private on the inside? I know like a gag order comes to mind, but even if you did that, is it going to remain? I mean, leaks happen essentially. So is there any way to not have to put your neck on the line and still seek justice?
In my view, practically speaking, there really isn't, because at some point in these cases, especially like before they go to trial, the defense, Diddy, is going to say, hey, look, we need to know who this person is so we can look into their background, so we can interview their coworkers and their family and find out if there are any credibility issues or if they've made false accusations in the past. And I just think that those concerns are going to weigh more heavily to a judge, especially as these things begin to culminate, than the plaintiff's privacy concern.
Which is why predators are able to continue on, because there's all these hoops people have to jump through to prove. And you know, in a certain way, rightfully so, you don't want people who are innocent being accused of horrible crimes and having their lives ruined by somebody who is out for a payday. And I'm not saying this person is, but, you know, when you have hundreds of accusations against you, probably a couple are bunk. There's likely a lot that have a lot of truth to them, is trying to sift through fact versus fiction to determine what is what. How, as an attorney, do you determine something like that? Like, if you were in the shoes of Busby and you got these people coming to you, how do you do that? How do you sort through what is real, what is not? You're just basing it initially on what someone is saying to you.
You know, attorneys have a duty. They have an ethical duty to kind of vet a client and what the client's saying before they file a lawsuit, to make sure that there is a good faith basis to believe these allegations are true. So absolutely, Busby and his team needs to be looking into the basis for these allegations. What evidence is there that supports it? What evidence is there that may contradict it? And sort of weigh those considerations and ensure that when you bring a claim, it's a legit one as best as you can tell. And still sometimes you get burned on that.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be difficult. I mean, there's only so many, what sort of resources do you go to confirm some of these things when they're allegations, especially from way back? How do you handle that?
Yeah, that's super tough. You know, you get a full in-depth statement from the client, and then you sort of begin to try to verify and or disprove what's in that statement. And so, yeah, you've got to go back and try to interview people who were around at the time who might have knowledge. You know, you look at anything that's available in the public record. You look at if there's any information about like Diddy's whereabouts. Was he in California when my client's saying this incident happened? Mm-hmm. So there are things that you have to kind of piece together, starting here and then working backwards.
Yeah, I don't envy folks in your field when you have to do that. That's got to be, you know, but at the same point, you're probably gathering evidence as well, just by confirming some of these things. Like, oh, okay, well, we got some legs to stand on here. But that's got to be a lot of work and a lot of claims. Let's talk about Chris Brown. Chris Brown and Diddy. Chris Brown, I think now, I guess what we would kind of call the second celebrity that's been publicly, officially accused. There's a lot of, you know, buzz out there of other people, but in an actual lawsuit, Chris Brown accused of sexually assaulting a woman at a Diddy party, a yacht party in 2020 on his boat. This is not an allegation against Diddy, but against one of, you know, another artist that who they claim was at a Diddy house. It's Chris Brown. So when I first saw that, I wasn't super surprised. But that being said, I mean, we can get into the history of Chris Brown in a second here. What was your reaction when you saw this allegation come out from, I mean, this one's only 4 years ago?
Yeah, you know, certainly very alarming accusations here in this lawsuit. You know, you think about Chris Brown's history. That there's a new documentary, Chris Brown: A History of Violence, yeah. that actually sort of gives a recitation of prior accusations. It certainly seems to fit the description. Then that doesn't mean that it's valid or has merit. And in fact, that the lawsuit we're talking about, I think, was dismissed at one point. So, you know, concerns on both sides about how these accusations are playing out and where they're going to go.
Well, and the individual in this accusation in that documentary, I got a chance to see it too. I think it's on Netflix. I think Netflix is where it's at. They remain anonymous throughout the entire thing. So again, it's another anonymous accuser. Not saying they're lying by any means, but it's like, okay, we're going to make these big claims in public. How, let me ask you about that, just in general. People making claims like this, they're, you know, obviously Chris Brown has some history of these accusations and guilt. But if you're just making a claim like this about somebody, that could ruin a reputation. The claim itself, what sort of protections does someone like Chris Brown have, or any celebrity? Let's take Chris Brown out of it because he's such a polarizing figure. Let's say somebody makes the accusation against, insert popular celebrity here. Did their name just have to go through the mud and they have to fight it? I mean, Garth Brooks recently got one, and that was really, he kind of spelled it out pretty quick. Like, look, here's the history of this person trying to extort me. Here's what they just did. It seemed pretty said and done. You're like, okay, there's not like a lineup of people trying to extort Garth Brooks after that. But with someone like this, you know, what's the answer to that?
Yeah, I that's exactly what I was thinking, Tony, was the Garth Brooks case. So, and he's maybe a more seemingly sympathetic character than Chris Brown. Yeah. And what he did was his team really tried to get in front of the allegations. They tried to protect, just as the plaintiff is trying to protect their anonymity, they tried to protect Garth Brooks's anonymity even as these accusations were taking form. And then on top of that, once they were publicly disclosed, Garth Brooks has filed a defamation case yeah. against his accuser. So there are some civil remedies that a person can avail themselves of if they're trying to protect their reputation against false accusations.
When a celebrity does not file a defamation case against someone making accusations, is that an admission of guilt? Is that, I mean, not technically, I know it's not, but if someone were to come at me and make some sort of, I'd fucking sue the shit out of them. Because it's like, you have no evidence of anything that I've ever done. And if you know deep down, like, this is bullshit. If you're a celebrity, much higher profile than any of us, you know, and you get that brought against you, is the right action to file a defamation claim right away? Or is it to let it sit out there, hope it goes away? I mean, what is the right practice to do in something like that?
You know, it's a matter of legal strategy. It's a matter of optics. And I think it's going to vary by case. I think one course of action is to file the defamation case immediately mm-hmm. and say, hey, this is bullshit. And we're going to come at you hard. Another alternative is to, especially if you know you're not in the wrong, let the accusation play out. And if you can beat the accusation, then you come with the defamation case. Because if you do it too prematurely, someone could say, oh, that's just victim retaliation. That's just victim blaming. We've seen that a million times. But if they've already beaten the accusation, then the other side doesn't have the retaliation argument to make.
Do they typically drop cases if you know it's bullshit and you're the celebrity and you come back and saying, I'm going to sue you for defamation? Is it like, oh shit, let's walk back? Or does some people still dig in to these things going, I'm still going to try and fight you?
Oh, sure. I think that people still dig in. I don't think that filing the defamation claim is going to do away yeah. with the underlying accusation or anything like that. You know, sometimes you can muster the legal firepower to scare somebody out of pursuing something. But I think here, especially with how our cultural climate is viewing these types of accusations against high profile folks, I think that's going to be a less likely outcome.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a lot of questions to ask about stuff like this when accusations are flying. And obviously Chris Brown has his history. So, I mean, it's par for the course. If you're looking at a personality arc of, is he still doing this sort of thing with the accusations that are out there? Not shocking. But again, it's an allegation, so we don't know. He's not been charged with anything as of right now. Of course, he's done his things in the past, and I don't want to say paid his dues because I don't agree with that. When you're an abuser, I don't think you ever really quite pay your dues for doing that. But, you know, he certainly has, you know, in the past gone through all this stuff. The fact that he's still a celebrity, the fact that people still listen to his music, a whole new generation listens to Chris Brown and has no recollection of the Rihanna stuff. That's what's kind of surprising to me. Is this like Chris Brown's second downfall from that first one that has no memory of Rihanna? And now, oh, let's revisit this. And some of these kids are shocked. They have no idea this guy did these things.
Yeah, Tony, that's funny you say that, because I had that same reaction. You know, I'm an elder millennial, and I remember what happened. But these you know, Gen Z and Gen Alpha folks don't even have an awareness of it. And I guess I thought that things would be kind of archived in this sort of you know, collective social archive where we know, you know, what's happened in the past.
Yeah.
But it's especially with social media and electronic documentation. But it sounds like that's not the case, and these things are outside of the presence of mind of some folks.
It's amazing, especially when you look at what I've been doing is trying to compare this to when we were a bit younger. And okay, like who would have been the artist like back then if this sort of thing were going on? It'd be like if Ike Turner were releasing songs in the 90s. They were like, yeah, Ike. It's just like we knew he was a horrible human being. It's like you beat the shit out of Tina Turner and we're horrible. So no, nobody was like, yeah, you're making a comeback. It was just like a sad, pathetic thing to watch every once in a while. But
I know.
Yeah,
it's a bizarre thing how you know, the evolution of a person's career and you know, I guess there are questions too about, is there redemption? Can someone come back from this? You know, or is their conduct so egregious that we have to turn our backs on them? And that's a hard question too. I don't know the answer.
I think it's part of like the fan culture. Some people just stick with it no matter what. We saw it with R. Kelly. We saw it with Michael Jackson. Obviously, he was never, convicted of anything. But, you know, when you're die hard, it seems they can do absolutely no wrong. Or the people believe that they did no wrong, I think is more important.
Yeah, totally. And that's actually in the Chris Brown documentary, Sacha Cole, who I think is a great culture writer, makes the comment that, like, you know, we've developed attachments to these people, feelings for them based on their artwork and how it's affected us. We don't want to believe that they're monsters.
No, we certainly don't. Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're in the thick of a true crime saga, every detail sinking in, and then, wham, a commercial about something you couldn't care less about. It's like being served a microwaved dinner at a five-star restaurant. But it doesn't have to be this way. Go for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today Premium Plus, you get uninterrupted, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that dig even deeper into the muck, and early access so you can brag to your friends. It's like ordering the secret menu at a crime buffet. So, search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and savor every twisted detail without interruption.